We're the slappy, happy, slappy little baker man. And we're always in it every minute now and then. From morn to night, we bake just right things to feed your appetite. But we never ever seldom or know just when your funny little tummy has a yum yum yen. From pies or tarts or gingerbread, or maybe jelly rolls instead. Now here's a recipe we know that surely can't go wrong. Just take some do-re-mi-so-do and mix it with a song. Then you add a little flour and some chocolate goo and some sugar and vanilla and some nutmeg too. Then you push it in the oven till a 10:15. We're the happy, slappy, happy little slappy, 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 slappy little bake, slap. We're the slappy, happy, slappy little baker men. That's what we are. Oh. Boxing Day baking. That's what we're doing today. Below the candles of the holiday. I'm gonna be here and unbox something for you today. There's a popular kind of video that used to be where somebody gets some product and they say, you're gonna watch me take it out of the box. Oh, all right. That's always the part of getting gifts. It's sort of boring if you don't know the person watching them open it and say, oh, you got that Funko Pop thing you wanted. Excited for them. But, I don't need to watch them take it out of the box when I get a present. Now, I hope I'm not sounding selfish. I love to see me take it out of the box because now it's my special little toy that I get. But watching someone else's joy is nice, but that's not what you're watching. You're just watching them go through the motions. Does that sound familiar? So something that's usually done in a spirit of love and community, now you're just watching a video of somebody just going through the motions. If you got the comparison, I don't want to have to state things, obviously. I'm here to talk to you today about dignity. Now, I'm not really here to talk. That's not really why I'm here. I'm here to fulfill an obligation because I said I would. Because once you commit to doing a show, they say, now you have to do them all the time. I said, well, I don't know. But I don't have ideas all the time. And they said, you said you'd do a shift. I said, okay. So, but I do have an idea today. Oh, my goodness, because I have been thinking about unboxing and dignity.
What do you mean?
Well, I'll get to that.
You mean unboxing like taking someone's boxer shorts off?
I don't know, no, but that's undignified unless they say, please do it because we're making an old-timey vaudeville thingy. And that'd be fine. And you know it's all context. Bless you so much. I opened with a song sampling the, I feel like, immortal Ritz Brothers. Because the mortal Ritz Brothers are dead. And so these have to be the immortal ones. And we're seeing them and they are but a shadow, aren't they? Once you're gone, you're just a bunch of Three Stooges shorts. And that could be 8mm films that your family took of you, of just you waving at the beach. And you're reduced to that and send people memories of you and some letters you wish you hadn't sent. But look at that penmanship. My goodness, things were different back then. People wrote differently. That even reflected their dignity. Now, not everybody was allowed to live in a dignified manner in the past. Oh, my goodness, no. Dignity was denied people. But that's because they valued it. Now, you just wonder if you could humble anybody. And I say, well, maybe it's a good thing it's disappearing. No, I'm going to argue for it. I'm not going to argue. I forgot. That's not what I do. I'm more, what's your style of communication, Hardy, rather than arguing? I say, hey, well, look at that beautiful sunrise, and while you've turned away, I put something in your drink. Not literally. I just mean an idea or a concept. I like to slip something into someone's... I know that's a terrible analogy. Well, you know, people get... I'm trying to think of a better analogy. I know. Here's a better one. Look at that sunset, and while you've turned around, I pick your pocket. And then I take your wallet out, and I put something in your wallet, and then I put your wallet back. So, no harm, no foul, but now you have something in your wallet you didn't have before, and you pull it out, and you go, what is this business card? I think I'll call it. You don't know how it got there, and you believe that you've come up with the idea on your own. So I'm sorry about the putting something in your drink thing. I would never do that, and I don't advocate for it, even as a concept. But I do advocate for stealing from people modifying what you've stolen and then returning it. I think that's fine. I don't like renovating people's homes while they're away. It's not the same thing. I need to take an ethics class just to go on the air. I don't know what I believe. My goodness, I haven't thought things through. Now, thinking things through is a profession, and it's called being a prophet. Now, the prophets that you read about in the Bible have a mixed track record. Someone like Jeremiah, his predictions came true, and then there was great suffering and anguish, and he was vilified. Then you have Jonah, who you know because he got eaten by a man-eating fish, spotted it. His predictions did not come true, and yet no lives were lost or anything. So who's the better prophet? Well, one person's predictions came true, so they'd say, well, their prophecy came true. But the other person, what they were supposed to do was warn, and then it looks like you're a big dummy when things don't turn out the way you said they would. Because nobody hears the unless part. That disappears in the translation. Oh, my goodness. So I'm here to sing you a song. It's about how Boxing Day got started. And I think it's mostly wrong. See, a box came in the mail one day to a young boy who was lonely. And he opened it up, and what was inside? A plastic fun toy pony. That pony turned its plastic head and said, I think it's broken. I don't know. I've painted myself into a rhetorical corner there. I don't know where to go with my beautiful story song. But I will tell you this. I always liked the idea. Now, the opening song, you say, what was that? Slappy Happy. There's an old cartoon called Busy Bakers. And
my grandfather, they called him Busy Baker. His last name was Baker. And
it's shushy. There's a old cartoon called Busy Baker, and they sing the song called Slappy Happy Slappy Little. Why is the second slappy there? For syncopation. Baker Men. And that's when I was singing along to the Ritz Brothers sample track that I made. Now, why would you do such a thing, Hardy? I don't know. And I wake up in the middle of the night crying all the time thinking about that, saying, what's going on? Where's this going? Oh, my goodness. But the thing I liked about that is that if your work was undone and then in the middle of the night, perhaps, if you've been a good person and you deserved it, tiny little creatures or whatever will come in, or demons or whatever, however you spell it, A-E-E-A-E, and they will do your work for you and finish. I thought it was making shoes, but in this case, it's... I feel more comfortable with the little demon people making shoes than I do them doing any kind of food preparation. Hear me out. I don't, bless your hearts, their culture's alien to me. Do you follow? Now they're in there popping around. Do they have a hand washing thing? Do they go, well, so here it's okay to touch your bottom and then make tarts? It isn't here. And so I hope that the little folk know that. Now, they can touch their butt all they want making my shoes. That's the thing. My shoes are going to be trotting upon worse things than a tiny little elf butt. And God forbid they should trot on an actual elf butt. I was so sorry I didn't see you there. As you get old, your responsibility for the consequences of your behavior, that remains the same, but your senses are diminished, and so you got to pay more attention, I find. So I think the older I get, I might stumble upon a tiny person. And I don't want to do that, or an animal or something. So many people are killed by their cat going down the stairs. I literally know somebody who was. This is not even a joke. Please be careful. So what I'm saying is that we sort of have to be prophets, don't we? And see consequences of how scary that is. You could see into the future if you weren't, like me, a scared ninny. Because it's very difficult to have real clear sight without trying to influence it. See what I'm saying? So I think this is the way things will be. Now, is that your wish? Is that your real prediction? Are you saying the opposite of what you want because you like to play reverse psychology with God? People don't even think they're doing that. I remember watching friends have certain emotional reactions to situations and where no one was responsible but themselves. But then there was a sort of demonstrating of the frustration through a tantrum. And I thought, well, this is left over from when you want a parent to witness the depth of your suffering. So that's what a tantrum is. A tantrum is like, if I just suck this up, you will not appreciate how much I'm suffering. And so much I must do a dramatic dance that demonstrates how messed up I feel about this situation, how helpless and sad and angry. So you throw this kind of tantrum, and adults do it too. They punch walls and things and say, the wall didn't do anything to you. It's a demonstration, a dance. Say, this is the extent of my suffering. This is what it looks like. And I want it to be witnessed to from my parent or God, or if you have no idea of God or something, say, well, maybe just other people. But then other people think, well, what do you want me to do about it? I'm sorry the radio isn't working and you're frustrated, but where's that going to go? Now, that's how we, even subtly, sometimes we see the everything that way in terms of frustration, wanting, and everything. So it's hard to predict what's going to happen because you don't want to predict yourself out of, well, if I think the worst, this was Jeremiah, this is what their argument was, is that you were not on team us. That's why we lost. You said we'd lose the war, and then we did, and it was you saying that we would do it that lost it. So some people say that when you predict something, you're really trying to influence it, and you are. So if you hadn't said that the bad thing was going to happen, then it wouldn't have happened. See, so that's in there too. And even if you don't believe that, it's in there, buried in there. I think about my brain a lot. Do you think about your brain a lot? I wonder what's in there. Like memory-wise, sometimes it pops up. Yeah. Now think how weird and recursive that is. I think about my how it's inaccessible to me in many ways. I blocked myself off. Why is this door locked in your brain? Don't come in there. Do you know what's in there? I don't remember either, but I know I can't get in there. That sort of thing. My goodness. Now try to use that to explore the universe. It seems inefficient, doesn't it? My goodness. So maybe it's impossible to have clear sight or be able to predict what's going to happen. And it's easier to predict what's going to happen with, say, other people than it is with your own life or something larger. Say, I know where this is going to go. I see where shopping malls are headed, and it ain't good. Yeah, there seems to be fewer stores. And yeah, soon that whole mall is going to be empty. Well, not Sears. I don't think it's pronounced Sears. Maybe in some part of the country. But, yeah, anchor stores. What do they anchor?
Anchor what?
Anchor what? Yes, turn them into great temples covered with vines, the old abandoned stores. That's what I see happening. No. Well, it could happen. Here's how it could happen. I've seen large abandoned department stores turned into churches. Because when economies fail, people go, oh, there needs to be more prayer. So I could see,
it isn't our fault. We must be not petitioning to God enough.
So they petition God more from the mall turns into a church. It's already happened. And then what happens then? Well, then the society collapses. The jungle takes over. I'm talking about both suburban Georgia and Cambodia. And then the malls actually turn into beautiful decaying temples. Then here's the fun part. And this was predicted not by Rudyard Kipling, but by Disneyland. And that is that the temples will be occupied by singing. There are a variety of apes, both great and lesser apes. Unbelievable, right?
Yeah, and monkeys.
Some monkeys. I don't know the hierarchy. God didn't. Planet of the Apes has it.
Are monkeys Do apes have pet monkeys?
I gotta think about it. I don't remember that part of Planet of the Apes. I don't remember. So, the apes sang, and I don't. There's a head ape singing in the mall. So the Mall Decaying Temple has a. Let's just say it's an orangutan, and I know they're from Indonesia or Borneo or something. And this doesn't all fit right. I don't know how it gets, but listen, people are immigrants. Say, oh, you know, it was like India. How did the orangutan get there? How does anybody get anywhere? You follow me? So people just are, that doesn't bother me too much. It doesn't bother me that the Disney Jungle Book has incongruity as far as what animals are there. Bless their hearts. They know how they got there. That's their story to tell. So these singing apes in the decaying mall temples of the future. Imagine them, see them in your mind. Isn't that beautiful? They are retaining their dignity, these apes, by singing the songs of their ancestors. I'm the king of the jungle VIP. I reached the top and I had to stop. That's what's bothering me. Oh, I could have been in that. You got to see this guy's Vegas act. It's not on the main stage. It's in the lounge. It goes all night long. Keely Smith, amazing. And I'm not talking about Louis Prima. I'm talking about this monkey singer of the future. And it's so similar than what's happened. That's why I say, oh, if you don't know your past, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, you know what? Marty Allen's coming back because you don't know who that is. Hello there, right? So, oh, you're going, I know who that is. They go, yes, you're an old. You're going to be dead soon. And then, oh, good God, who knows what will come back. That's what I'm saying, the Ritz Brothers. But people right now, we are in, none of you read the Bible who say you do, but I know there's some people that, had to take a course in college, so you probably did. So you know this. So right now I feel like we're living in the age of Isaac. You know, the blind one who redug all of his father's wells, didn't do any of his own accomplishments and just played them over again. Now I'm not trying to diss anybody, but I see the grandchildren, great-grandchildren of famous, iconic famous people, had certain, were caricaturable and everything. Trying to cash in on the family look or something and say, oh, look at me. I look just like Uncle Famous. And they say, oh, all right. Well, yeah, I guess a little bit. Yeah, I grew the mustache and everything. All right, now I guess you look like Uncle Famous. And this is an indication that there's a generation not digging their own wells. And they're lost in the past and recreating it and everything like that. And oh my goodness, how do you break? Did you see that in your vision? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go into, I've done this before, I'm going to do it again. And I'm doing it for entertainment purposes. And I think most lies, you don't think of entertainment being lies. I say, you lie a lot, Hardy. Well, I mean, you guys go to movies and everything. If you go to a superhero movie, you need to shut up. Because that's nothing but lies. I got to tell you. And we're going to fool them. How? You're going to think a guy's flying. But what? He won't be? No. I'm going to use trickery. That's how the movies work. So I'm using trickery, just the most ancient form, and that's just straight up just lying to your face. And that is the origin of storytelling. And in my family, I don't know, my grandmother always said, you're telling a story. You're telling stories. And I thought, so her word story meant lie, soap opera, and lastly, like a story, like you'd tell somebody a story. Isn't that funny? So for her, she would use, you're telling stories. And, did you watch your stories? And then the third meaning would be the one that we kind of put first. And that is like, what's the storyline? What's the story arc? There's a smaller arc, episode to episode, and then there's one large arc. Do you follow me? Uh-huh.
So where Columbo solves a murder every episode, but he's looking for his brother the whole time.
That they didn't used to do that. He was just, maybe the wife thing. I'm looking for my wife constantly. I'm here. I'm thinking about her and you at the same time. He doesn't do that. But that'd be interesting. We would insist on it now. I don't know who invented that, but that popped up and you go, oh, good God. All right. At least it's sort of good because the soap opera thing was annoying. You'd go, oh, it's nothing but long arc and every episode feels unsatisfying unless you drop a goodly bit of information. And so why is so many of those soap opera actors not win any awards? Well, you know, I think it's the material. It's just really hard. People begin to resent soap operas the same way you resent pharmaceutical drugs you're addicted to. You know, it's like, oh, this is pretty good. But it's like, oh, dang it. I would love to do without. And because, you know, the overall, you're not getting anything out of it. All soap operas are designed to do is to get you to watch another episode. And I was just thinking about the opposite kind of entertainment. Those movies, you go, I'm glad I saw that movie, but just once is enough. I'm shook. That is a thing, and people have said that with my show. Say, I heard the one episode that one time. Why you did 500 more, I'm not sure, Hardy. I said, well, momentum. You know how that is. That's the way Santa started. So I was made it with one child was making toys for. And then, the ho-ho-ho is actually a bronchial thing. Because he works so hard. And he's always getting some kind of upper respiratory infection. Sorry, that's horrifying. But then you start making more toys for all the children. This happened to me with ramen. I started making ramen. And I put a lot of care into it and make my own noodles and stock and everything. Just really was finicky with it. And then friends would go, this is great. And we're all coming over. And then I'm making ramen like for, you know, half dozen, eight people. And I thought, man, this is exhausting. Because just me and I'm not good. I mean, I'd being efficient. I guess the food was good or they wouldn't want it. And this happened with pies, so sure do like those pies. And I don't mind, but, you know, it grows because people love being loved, don't they? And being made to feel special. And that dignity is a wonderful thing. What is that? What do you mean? Getting a pie is dignified? Well, being honored, recognizing that we're all very special. And we aren't. Well, see, that's another philosophy. So you can be like that, and you can say, none of us have any value, and we're just objects, and it doesn't matter what happens to anybody. And why do I care about their suffering? How does it affect me? And I don't see any connections between people. There was a period a few years back, and maybe it was about 20 years ago, where a certain type of museum exhibit became popular. You know, some of these museums, they have rotating things. They aren't there all the time. They'll have exhibits come through and say, these are the jars that the Red Sea Scrolls were in. And we all go look at them and say, these are the Pompeii people, folks. Oh, that's horrifying. Well, there was something more horrifying. Out of Germany, a scientist figured out that he could take human remains and remove their skins, flay them like Saint Bartholomew, and then preserve them in some kind of plastic stuff. And you could see that human body with all its muscles and everything. They looked all preserved, just like you were looking at a freshly skinned human playing frisbee or riding a freshly skinned horse or something like that. And so people wanted to see, and they were fascinated with the human body. Look at it. And so they'd go and they'd look at real, and it was touted that it was these are actual remains. And the German scientists, I believe, got donated bodies, you know, to do it. People had given their bodies to science and everything. But then it caught on. And there's some enterprising folks in China who said, we have some bodies that we're not doing anything with. We've got these executed criminals and everything. We'll sell them to you, skinned and dipped. And then how about that? And so those caught on, and people were saying, look at these. In the human body, fantastic. But see, none of them were really looking at it and say, you know, Oh, if we're such delicate, frail creatures, ones that provoke, you say, maybe God exists from a teleological argument. This watch must have a watchmaker. Look how brilliant it is, right? So maybe it needs to be treated with respect and all that. And all the time, it's the museum of irony. Are these plucked and humiliated, oppressed corpses, some of them with bullets still in them, are displayed so we can see the wonder of the future. Oh, my goodness. I don't mean to preach, but... wouldn't that more likely inure you, make you more calloused to seeing something like that, an abomination so grotesque? When in the course of your ordinary life would you see a skinned human, unless you were in an anatomy class in the 1500s or something, or... I don't want to go into it. I don't even know where. But certain aesthetics, you become used to them. And you go, well, maybe it's not a big deal that that's a human body. Maybe it isn't special. Maybe they are like turkey carcasses. So you say, oh, I wonder why people aren't vegetarians. Geez, maybe they could, first of all, grant dignity to humans. And then work on down. Bless us all. And I crave it too. I'm not perfect. Oh my goodness. I have to remind myself all the time. Wait a minute. Lift yourself up. Respect yourself and respect others. Getting into a quagmire of disrespect and loathing, getting used to it. And I believe, I don't know much about philosophy and history, but I believe this idea... That we're all garbage, or that, you know, the world itself is imperfect and horrifying, as if that might be an idea too, and that goes back a ways, I think, but I don't know if it's the dominant one, and I don't know whether it's the one that makes you bring cookies to old people. I wonder what that is. Explore it. Don't be afraid. Keep going. Go past your fear, looking for answers, and. Maybe go past your desires when you look for those answers and you want the clarity. How do I do that? I don't know. That's why I just started the show singing about cookies. I couldn't think of anything else to do. I wanted to retain my dignity. It's so hard to do online. Oh, my goodness. Immediately turn into a toddler. All the time. I do it, too. And I don't know why. I guess that's maybe when you see somebody, it's easier. To grant them and know their name. Then if you're a jerk, that's pretty telling. That you must be pretty committed to it. And then some of us are just part-time jerks. I wish I could get out of it. I'm not a professional like a lot of jerks. Oh, bless you for even being with me. Someone so confused and consumed with their own fears, singing songs from 30s cartoons. What's wrong with you? Are you also an infant? Are you stuck forever licking the icing off of cinnamon Pop-Tarts, watching Kimba the White Lion and thinking, this one's not for me, this is not my cuppa, even then you didn't know the expression yet. This is not my sippy cuppa, is what I would say when I didn't like a show as a child. You can use that. I don't mind if you use that. Use all of my... They call them dad jokes, but they're mom jokes. Moms are corny. You know, they're parent jokes. Let's be real. Or older people. It's, you know, it's so funny, like that old head is an expression now, meaning like an OG or something. But as someone who's suffered from old head since early middle age or even late adult or young adulthood, hey. That means something different to me. Isn't that funny? Language changes too. I wonder who will endure longer, me or the bread. I'd say the bread, the brand of bread. Because it's selling things. And people have more value on things they have to pay for. So the more money you shell out for something, the more it's worth. And it can be more worth more than people. So that's why things are worth more than people, because they're very low on the worth thing, unless they're worth something. I don't believe that. And it angers people, and it is a very dangerous, radical thing to say all people have the same worth. I used to say that and not believe it. But now I'm like, oh, dang it. You know, that's just the worst thing you can do. Wherever you go, you say, oh, I understand that dumb culture. No, I'm telling you, that kind of equality is, you get accused of a lot of things. Oh, yeah, we all win, huh? We're all winners, right? The idea of, that's because at the basis of the idea of eugenics is something sinister, that, and we accept the sinister thing, and we don't understand the offspring of the sinister idea. I preach about it all the time. I've done, so I said, this is what I tell people. This is what Francis Galton, he did. He came up with this kind of eugenics thing about how to make people better, you know. It's like the best qualities of people, and then they are the ones. We don't force them, you know. He didn't have that kind. He said, but, you know, we want to encourage people who are smart and good-looking to reproduce and all that kind of thing. And he also, as I've said many times, wrote a book called The Art of Travel, where he evaluated different sort of products and strategies, which one was good, better, and best and in situations. But if you read that book, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. Now, what makes this one thing better? He would have solutions that were the best solution that were unobtainable. So they were never any kind of making do. There was never an acceptance of the way things were. There was an imposed hierarchy. There must be a hierarchy in nature, he thought. Some things must be better than others. And, you know, some things, evolution works that way. That's working towards something. Everything is evolving towards, there's going to be alligators that are like golden gods. And what seems to be going on is that something could be a good idea for the moment, or you may be successful for the moment, or it might be your day in the sun because it's, you've got the right kind of thing, but that doesn't make it the better thing, because the next day it could be the worst thing. So at the very, pardon upon best, good, better, and best can apply to moments and things like that, but they can't apply to people. Ever. So I'm sorry. And I know that you're tuning out and go, no. There are people, when you say that, even if you're a good person who believes that, if you've got this kind of contrarian thing, we go, I need to provide balance to everything that is said on the radio or that I hear. Now that is beautiful. Thank you. What a good student. All teachers want you as a student. So thank you. I want you to hear everything I say, and before you go home and think about it, contradict it. I know it to be. Thank you. This is just, go back and forth with each other then. This is lovely. We'll just play badminton. But I think that's, if somebody speaks to me, I got to go think about it for a while. Because the rightness, wrongness, goodness, badness, that may be something I got to savor for a while. Like little people making baked goods. Seems like a good idea. I didn't get my work done. So if they want to come in and make stuff, but how are they making it? Are they making it right, man? Do I know? I know what I'm talking about. No, you don't. I don't know. And you don't know either. And that's that's a good feeling, don't you? Just like when you open something under the Christmas tree. This is unboxing day, because yesterday, I'm not saying everybody celebrates Christmas. That's not, we're right in the middle of, or just, Hanukkah just began too. But that also might mean that yesterday you opened something. And even, well, I don't celebrate any of those things. Do you eat cereal? Well, of course, everyone eats cereal. What kind of cereal do you eat? I eat, whoops, all berries. I'm going to give you a heads up. I was so concerned about my stool. I went on a oops, all berries binge, and it doesn't say anywhere on the box that there's a maximum dosage. But there is, because I believe that some of the food dyes they're using are not digestible. That your system doesn't want them. So I'm not really, we're not interested in the purple. And they go right through. But let's see, it's what happens when you melt a whole box of crayons. It's not a pleasing color. It's disconcerting. So all those come together, and you don't want that. I'm not saying it's a bad product, but here's an idea. I did a blind taste test, and all those little crunch berries, they taste the same. You'd think, oh, the blue ones taste like blue raspberry, but that's not a thing. But and the green ones taste like green, okay? Green apple, gross. But, you follow. But they don't. They just taste like a cornball, a sweet cornball, little corn pellet thing. Like Kix, maybe, or sweet. I don't know. I know it's not the same texture. We're going to sue you. Go ahead. But I'm saying you don't need the dye. Or could you, oops, all lychees or something for, and I'm telling you, there's a lot of like bougie types that buy them.
This is very clever. I find this very clever. They've used a way to get rid of the food dyes. None of us want. And then turn that kind of like edgy humor to sell the product. But really, they're doing a good thing.
Yeah? That's a good idea, you think? I think so. I think that maybe that was a... I don't know if that's the same idea behind Flintstones vitamins. But if you want to introduce some pop culture element to get me to do something that's right, and we could totally do that with medicine in this country if it just it was branded better and had just celebrities or cartoon faces on it. I think you could have done, I mean, if the pandemic had happened earlier, I would have done I would have gotten with Fox and gone, we got to do a Simpsons thing where the Simpsons are all like you get like you get the shot and then you get a Homer Band-Aid. I would have been first in line. Not now. I wonder what now. Now they, I don't know that there's anything animated that could get me going, inspire me like that as an animated character. Who could really get me? Maybe the Beatles George from the old Beatles cartoon? Maybe. If there were a Rich Brothers cartoon from that same era, I wonder how that would have... I think it would have gone something like this. Well, first of all, this is... oh, my goodness. A lot of what I say I know is only of interest to me. And if you'd really like, I highly recommend Leonard Maltin's book, Movie Comedy Teams. It is, he wrote it when he was 12 or something. And I'm not even joking. I think maybe he was 18 or something. It's a really good book because it's pre-internet, right? So I don't know. He got some good info and really important book to me coming up. But... let's talk about the, I can't do a good Harry Ritz voice. I'm crossing my eyes and doing things. But, you know, it's sort of the origin of the Jerry Lewis stuff. And I've talked about how maybe Pee Wee Herman borrowed from Joe Panner and all that kind of stuff. What's your point here? I'm getting to my point. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to lose my temper with you. Oh, my goodness. I was just finding some way to segue into that very loud Dawes Butler, Jerry Lewis voice that was the Quisp cereal voice. And it's very loud, and I've used it as the punchline of so many jokes that I think I have to stop now. And I know it's annoying. What if I told... I'm going to save that story here. Hang on, I need to cross something off. Never... tell the story that you were about to tell. Some things are too revealing. I realize that. I might be sharing too much. Say, I'm going to give you something now. And you go, oh, I didn't quite want that. That makes you look undignified. Now, my personal dignity as a performer, this is should be of interest to you. See, it's my right to be undignified. I can do it to myself, I believe. And any individual can do it to themselves if they're not being forced to. Some people are forced to do undignified things. As a power thing. But if you want to goof around on yourself and just drop your pants for a joke, that's your business. That's wonderful. And you take command. My beef is when we mess with the dignity of others. That's where I have I'd like to see everybody up. And I know that makes me ideal, and I'd rather have people be idealists because they're future-driven than people who are so-called realists because they're actually past-driven. Because when you say, well, these are the way things are, I go, all right, and it all stops here. Well, how do things get to be then? And so it's just logical that the people that seem sort of the most unrealistic are the actual people that are making things. And the people that seem realistic are the people that are living in abandoned bathtubs. So there's a big difference. And I say, we're building palaces for ourselves. Maybe not literally, because I don't want to do any of that kind of, my goodness. What if you went to a barn raising? Say, I'm going to help my friends raising a barn. Yeah? Yeah, Jacob and his wife, Jacob. All right, and yeah, we're going to have them raise a barn. And we go out there, and you tell them what happened.
Well, we got out there, and it was stone.
What?
It wasn't just a barn. It was some kind of big stone structure, like maybe old European-looking or something. And we had to stack stones way higher than I was comfortable doing. And they said, well, there's going to be a wooden frame on the inside. Oh, this is too much. What are we building here? And they said, well, it's a Tudor. And I said, I'm going to stop you right there. No.
So if anybody invites you over to do something like that in a barn building, but in the Tudor style, say, oh, I can't do that. I'd like to do Habitat for Humanity. But they're, you know what people would, here's the problem I have about people have a charity hang up where they start trying to figure out what people deserve. You know? So that when they build people houses, or I'm gonna build your house, but it's gonna be modest. It's like, why? This is a poor person. Give them a mansion. You know, what is their shot of ever living in a mansion? You're giving them something, you could give them more, but you're like, well, we're gonna give you something modest. Because that's close to what you are, modest. And we always think about things. That's how I came up. See, that's a poor person. That's a foreign person. And all his adjectives were identified them and ranked them. And I had to break free of that. How did you do it? I unboxed. I realized that I was the plastic Funko toy and that I was being trapped in this box. And then I could get out of it. And I could unbox myself and rediscover that dignity. That, you know, that island, the Rankin Bass, which is, that's so funny. Because it's, it sounds like, oh, no, smelly dead fish. Exactly. So smelly dead fish, stop motion people. They made that Rudolph where it's like, we're going to make Rudolph an outcast. And then there's going to be other toys that are outcasts because we're used to outcasts. And that's what we do is like, get out of here, different. And so that resonates, doesn't it? That I can be a story. So they take all these misfit toys. So misfit toys, the misfit island. Because they don't want to mix, intermingle with them or something. I don't know what's up with that. Hey, Santa's doing this, by the way. Right? So they all go over there, and one of them wants to be a dentist, and I think that's, I don't want to make accusations, but I think that might be even an ethnic dig. And then they find, well, no, they've got things that they do delight children and all that, and children, I guess the point, children are quite as bigoted as you think they are, because bigoted, that comes from being indoctrinated, and if you don't teach them that, they'll be fine with this broken toy, and la, 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 and only children are watching the story. So it's pointless. But that's why they say, well, if we're going to perpetuate this system, we'll tell the kids what's up, and they'll go, yeah, yeah. But the adults will let them keep perpetuating this idea of good. What's a good toy? What's a good, I've suffered from it.
Is it the quality of your?
Yes, I do what the Nazis would call degenerate art. You know, it's degenerate. It seems to be undignified and denigrating to the human condition. But in fact, it's liberating. It's the opposite. What I do, I believe, is the opposite of undignified. I believe that putting your chin up and being a human being unapologetically and saying that other beings too, whether you, I could contradict me all day long, for the world I want, other people have to be special and important. And all of their lives have to be equally important. Yes, but there's some, all of their lives. And without that, I have nothing to dream. Just sadness. And so I'm opening a box. And I'm letting something out. And you say, well, ooh, it's Pandora. Pandora, open the boxes, let this thing out. Why are we boxing things up? Pandora's box. Pandora was, it wasn't curiosity, it was liberation. So open it up, let these things out. It's the boxing them that is the confusing thing. Don't box yourself. I'm not a, you're fine. I've tortured myself thinking I'm not the right kind of toy on that Rankin Bass thing. You're not the kind of radio that anybody wants. Well, maybe I am. No. You're a sad, unwanted toy. No, come on. And then they did, I guess Toy Story was like that too. You know, these are the toys that were tortured by the child that didn't watch the Rankin Bass story. And that's another take. Bless you so much. I wish I could make you bake something for you. Come into what work didn't you get done?
Spreadsheet.
I go in there and have little people do your spreadsheet.
All right.
This is such a stupid thing. This is something I'm going to say that's only on podcasts and everything. But if you've watched that Happy Little Baker Men. One of them seems to be Italian. Now, that implies that there's a worldwide or European-wide network of little tiny night bakers, I guess. And I don't know. We could go deeper, but I'm fascinated by the worlds that you accidentally create worlds when you do that. All those people that did that are dead, and now look what they've done. They didn't know their work would endure so long. That's what you got. All the loving things you make are a potential future golem. No one knows, you know, that destroy your art. That's the thing. Say, AI is a golem maker. It's just resurrecting your clay sculpture that you made as a child in good faith and in context, in a historic context, you know. And it's going to take it and it's going to steal it and make it do something that you would never make it do. I spent a while building large puppets. When I lived in Tallahassee, I built big puppets and like parade puppets. And we would have weird night puppet parades. I don't know if you've done that, but I would do it. I've done it recently. Still, someone said, I didn't know you could do it. I go, I'll get some musicians out there and I'll bring the giant puppets. And so I was moving or something or wrapping up the studio with my partner at the time, puppet-making partner, and a political, what do you call those? Like a, not burlesque, but a political satire group, you know? A capital funsies or something. I don't know what they, they'd say, we want to borrow your puppets and use them as political figures. And you know, so this puppet is, Tom Bitchy Botch, and we don't like him and everything. And I was like, no. My puppets, they already have a soul. You can't do that. No, they're special. And they're not there to be, their souls are from the collective, too. They're not any one individual. We don't put individuals into puppets like that. That's dangerous. So I'm not going to go into the spirituality of puppet making, but I wouldn't go into it lightly. The puppet stuff. Just saying. There's a reason there's traditions and things like that. You're going to swallow your swazzle. I would like to thank you for this past year. As we near the end, I don't want this show to not be evergreen, but today is Boxing Day, and so, and I probably won't be replaying the show. I did a Boxing Day special in, I think, 2019, if you want to go back and look at it, with all my UK friends. So I think they're all, I know that Ergo is on it, and Vicky, and I think Willie. But that you should go back and listen to that right after this one's over. Don't interrupt this one, because I haven't even gotten to the punchline. Because I didn't speak about unboxing your... Oh, no, wait, I did. Let's see. But I didn't talk about baking the tiny... Well, no, you did that too. So I will now just sing some holiday songs for you. And this is one, a favorite that I've sung before, and to which I do not know all the words. The boar's head is, I understand, the finest dish in all the land. With and Rosemary. Now, if you don't know who Rosemary was, then you never watched the old Dick Van Dyke Show. And she was on Twitter until, I think, like 2020 or something like that. It was amazing. Oh, and she's also what you want to put on your under your nose if you were around any kind of rotting corpses, which is something, not every holiday has those, but people would use, I think, rosemary for that sometimes, or other kind of, we talked last week about pine resin and everything. Maybe we talked about frankincense and myrrh. Just those are great, and you could just stick them up your nostrils. I remember I was in a practice cove, in my band was practicing in Montpellier, France, in 2000, and these little practice caves that were old wine coves, hundreds of years old. So you go to this place and you go down these stone stairs into this windowless, and it felt like unventilated, like wine cave. And there you would smoke lots of the cigarette-y kind of joints. This is horrifying. There was this hash with tobacco, and there was a my band's playing and practicing, and this guy walked in, Algerian fella in a green tracksuit. He looked great. And in one of his nostrils was all these green leaves were packed up, were just hanging out. And a friend asked him what was going on, and he said it was mint, and he had mint just hanging out of one nostril shoved up there. And I've not seen anyone do that before or since, and I don't know whether his name is Abdul, by the way, and he was where the hash was coming from, by the way. That's also something I figured out. So he's a wave at him and everything. He's a good time. They were good times. And he was a nice fellow. He was very eccentric, and that's what I... So the mint up the nose. So now I'm thinking, I wonder if I could do nostril sachets. Is that something y'all be interested in? So what I would do is I would take different dried herbs, or fresh ones even, that I had grown, tie them together with a little sisal, and then, I don't know, neaten it up, you know, so it's not going to irritate your nose, and then you just shove it up one nostril, and it's like having an air freshener all the time. And this is something that beard oil will also do. Or my, I invented the air freshener mustache, fake mustache. It's a cardboard, it's one of those old cardboard, old-timey mustaches. And the little two prongs that go up your nostrils, and then it's the kind of cardboard thing that you usually see hanging from somebody's rearview mirror that's been soaked in cologne or anything. But it's a mustache, and it's right under your nose, so it doesn't even have to do the whole room. So let's say you have a pine-scented cardboard mustache, and it looks like a real one. You're not going to look like an idiot. It looks like a real mustache. And go about your business, and you, it smells nice in here. So even if you're someplace that smells nasty, because you, if you have friends that have old houses and there's old carpet and they corked pork chops there in the 70s, it's got odor. So it's, oh, you can't, and you can't just go around holding your nose. Or sometimes I hold a silk handkerchief up to my nose, just kind of delicately, and I'll go, and hope no one notices. Ooh, dear, like that. But someone usually notices. They go, why are you speaking that high-pitched voice? So I don't know. I got to be honest with you. There's an odor I'm not used to that your house has. Oh, bless you. I have, there's something that's, this is a very difficult part about radio. When I'm live on the radio, I can play my theme, and then, which is 50 seconds. And the reason it's under 50 seconds, the reason I do that is so I don't have to say what the song is. And then I play that, right? And then do the show. And then you get to the end, it goes, oh, you're done. Get off there. There's the next show. You know, you can run over. I mean, if you have something to say, You can run over and you go, oh, Artie's going to be mad. But I'm not mad. Just start the show later and everything. And then, but here's the thing. So when I record, though, I'll be talking to you. Sometimes I don't put the theme first. I go, I'm going to record the show. I'll leave the 50 seconds. And they'll bring me right up to the hour. And then I'll know and do the station ID right before that. But here's the problem. Sometimes when I do not put that, I'll go right up to the hour, forgetting that I now have to put an introduction in. And I've omitted it a couple times, and they said, like, hey, you're not saying the name of the show, or you're not, you need that intro, let people know what's going on. I said, don't confuse people. But that's the same reason that you shouldn't do dead air for art purposes. It's just some things that don't translate. There's the idea is taken wrong. But I'm going to go ahead and just do a lot. No, I can't do dead air at the end of the show. And it keeps airing. Silence is an interesting thing. Even John Cage said, you know, silence isn't silence. You know, it's traffic noise. And if you don't believe that, I sampled him saying that. So silence is traffic noise. I mean, not literally, literally too. But also not literally. So I would just like to propose that, among other things, my show is also silence. Because I know for a fact that it's been on in the background in some people's lives, and it could be. You could have it on the radio. Let's say you're traveling. I've done it with my own show. Let's say you're traveling, and for some inexplicable reason, you're playing my show. But then the person with you is saying something interesting, or something interesting is happening all around you. Like an alien invasion or something. And then I'm on, and that's a sort of silence. Anytime you're not paying attention, the minute you start listening, maybe there isn't silence. That's why when people go into those rooms that are completely, there's some completely silent rooms, and apparently has a terrible psychological effect on people. People can't stand them long. There are these acoustic, you know, kind of padded rooms, and there's literally no sound. And I just, I don't know. I guess you can't find yourself in space. You know, you use echolocation a little more than you think, probably, if you're a hearing person. But this is and you could be used to that kind of silence. But for people who aren't, you know, it's disconcerting. There's no sense that's not had by somebody. Oh, bless you. Oh, I love you so much. Nothing's better. Nothing's worse. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online WFMU.org worldwide, and I've done it again. And let's just say I have a new theme, and it's the happy little slappy little Baker Man theme song. Stay tuned for Mahogany.
Thank you. to become one. And it's so wonderful, the union between a real man and a woman. Not just a lover, but a genuine friend. Unconditional, got each other till the end. And nothing could ever compare to what you